support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Stephen Sondheim's rapturous musical, A Little Night Music. Featuring an all-star cast, A Little Night Music begins performances at ACT's Geary Theater May 20th. ACT-SF.org.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. You have a novel you've been thinking about self-publishing, but you're worried about self-publishing stigma. Or you're wondering if there are advantages of publishing an ebook as opposed to a paperback. Are you stumped as to where to find a good editor? We'll check in on the changing world of self-publishing, consider the pros and cons of the traditional publishing industry, and answer your self-publishing questions. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's Forum program. In this Forum hour, we're going to take a close look at the world of self-publishing, its advantages and disadvantages, and to what degree it can help or hinder an aspiring career as a would-be writer of fiction or nonfiction. And we're joined by a panel of three who have much to tell us about navigating through the world of self-publishing, ebooks versus paperbacks, and the quest and challenges of publishing with a small or large house on your own. Laura Fraser is with us here in studio. She's the author of a number of books and editorial director of She Books, which publishes short ebooks by women. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael.
Also, Mark Coker here with us in studio, founder of Smashwords, an ebook publishing and distribution platform, which is based in Los Gatos. Welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
And Ted Weinstein, who is a literary agent and founder of Ted Weinstein Literary Management. He's also a former music critic for NPR's All Things Considered and has helped run workshops like Book Proposal Bootcamp and The Business of Publishing. Welcome, Ted Weinstein.
Thanks very much.
Let's start with you, because the business of publishing seems to be, on the one hand, you've got a tsunami of content out there, a lot of book publishing, and more competitive than ever, but we keep hearing about the state of publishing being in disarray and somewhat depressed and people finding it very difficult to get their books published, whether it's a big house or a small house.
I think definitely things are changing. The changes, though, are mostly to the advantage of authors. I make my living in traditional publishing, but I'm nothing but a celebrant of all of the new self-publishing options that are out there. It's harder to break through for an author, but that's true whether you're self-publishing or working with a traditional press. The challenge for every author is really the self-knowledge to figure out what is it they're trying to accomplish and then sort through what is an increasing rather than decreasing number of options.
Boy, are the options increasing. I mean, you know, I know people just in the last few months who have either gone to or published books on Amazon, which you can do now, self-publish. And let's distinguish between self-publishing and vanity presses, because a lot of people think vanity press is a form of self-publishing.
The old vanity press model is from the era of physical books, and that's when you had to front a lot of money to print a lot of books that would then sit in your garage and you had to figure out a way to sell them. The digital world means now that you don't have to put up as much money up front, and you're only really selling on demand, whether it's digital or for print-on-demand physical books. And so the opportunity is very much independent, but it's no longer a company taking advantage of an author. It's rather companies like the two folks represented here that are creating an opportunity for an author that they can choose to take advantage of.
But everyone needs, particularly in the digital world, to sell themselves. They need to brand themselves and they need to market themselves. And it's harder when you move away from a traditional press, obviously, isn't it?
Well, I think it's actually, in this day and age, platform is everything. That's the word we use in the industry, which literally means how high you stand above everybody else. But platform is important and precedes a book idea. That we often get authors coming to us as agents who say, hey, get me a book deal and then I'm going to be famous. And our reply is, no, get famous first and then we'll get you the book deal. And that's true in traditional publishing as well as self-publishing.
But in traditional publishing, if you get a book deal, you get designers and salespeople. I mean, particularly in the bigger houses, you get publicists, you get Really, all kinds of things that you have to come by naturally are on your own resources if you self-publish.
That's absolutely true. And that's why I say so much of this is about self-awareness. Folks who go down the self-publishing route, the key word there is publishing. They have to take on all of those publishing roles, as you just said. Whereas in a traditional environment, some of those roles are taken on by the publisher. And yet every author should see him or herself as the core of their own multimedia empire. So even if they're not the publicist, they're overseeing whoever's doing the publicity, whether it's someone at a publishing house or somebody they might have hired independently.
Again, Ted Weinstein is a literary agent and founder of Ted Weinstein Literary Management. And Laura Fraser is editorial director of She Books, which publishes short e-books by women. She won a medal for a self-publishing anthology, in fact, the Ippy Award. And she's also got 80 authors in her. Can you still use that word, stable?
Sure.
Okay. But this essentially small for women digital publisher. That's what you do. I guess, would that include transgender writers, by the way?
Sure. You know, and men who want to change their name or just use initials like George Eliot did. We're up for that.
Self-publishing used to be a little bit of a stigma. Maybe it still is. What do you think?
I think that most authors would prefer to go with a legacy publisher because there is still some it's a classier operation, generally speaking. But one of the things that we're trying to do at shebooks.net is take that model of a classy operation and make it smaller and make it something where it's more accessible to women to tell stories that other women love to read. We provide the editing, the copy editing, the design. We do all of that at a very high level. But it's a better percentage for the author because it's digital.
Well, with all this self-publishing, freelance editing services are booming, we can safely say. But you provide the editing, in other words, for your writers that you...
We do. In that regard, we work like a traditional publisher. We get the stories we think are best. We either commission them or we read through a lot of them. And then we have really good editors who go through and spend a lot of time with the manuscript so that we end up with the best story we can possibly publish, which is really different from a model where you just upload your story and it gets published.
But you're also working on a 50-50 basis, as I understand it, which is certainly not what the traditional publishers, or as you call them, the legacy publishers do.
Right, at the moment. And that was predicated on the idea that our authors would do a lot of their own publicity as well as us doing a lot of publicity as a brand. And it's something that we have to take a close look at in terms of do those numbers really work out. I think that in the future we may have to incentivize authors who do more publicity. There are still a lot who sort
or
of
who
sit,
sell more books.
Who sell more books. Yeah. There's still a lot who a few who will sit back and say, I wrote the book. Now you do everything else, the sort of luxurious 18th century model, which, I mean, I myself would love to work that way.
Well, the truth is most books don't make money. And the truth is also that there are more women readers, apropos of the enterprise that you have, than there are men readers. Yeah,
there are. And our hope is that by bringing together the best stories, we're creating sort of a boutique, a collection, where instead of going to a huge ebook publisher where it's kind of like, you know, the Kmart of books, you walk into a boutique where you know everything here is going to be well written. It's going to be an interesting story about a woman's life. And so you don't have to just kind of, you know, a lot of the big ones like Oyster or Scribd are, it's kind of like having a library card. You have no idea what's out there. It's really hard. We're curated is really the big difference.
So what happens when you go to the bookstores, though? I mean, self-publishers often are not exactly warmly embraced with the bookstores.
This is tough. We recently published this print anthology, the one that we got the Ippy Award for. And we love independent bookstores, but they're not really set up to sell that kind of a print-on-demand book. If they sell, because usually they get to return, oddly, in the world of business, they get to return the stuff that they don't sell. With books, with self-published books, they can't just return them. They take them usually on consignment. They consider that a big hassle. A lot of them aren't even set up in their systems to do that. So that's a huge advantage to people who are disadvantaged to people who are self-publishing, getting into bookstores.
And Laura Fraser, again, also with us in studio, editorial director of She Books, which publishes short e-books by women. Mark Coker is the founder of Smashwords. They're an e-book publisher and distribute platform based in Los Gatos. All started for you, Mark. You and your wife were trying to get a satire about soap operas published. Was that?
Right. My wife, Leslie Ann, is a former reporter for Soap Opera Weekly magazine. About 10 years ago, we wrote a novel titled Boob Tube, which is a satire about the dark underbelly of Hollywood celebrity. We were lucky enough to get represented by one of the top literary agencies in the country, Distel and Goderich. And for 2 years, they tried to sell the book to all the major publishers of commercial women's fiction. And for 2 years, they got nothing but rejection. The publishers were reluctant to publish.
Should have found Laura Fraser.
I should have taken
your name off of it.
Yes. Or found Ted. Actually, I love the agency. Distel is great. But the publishers were reluctant to take a chance on the book because previous soap opera-themed novels had performed poorly. And so it was a really disappointing experience for us to have the publishers slam the door in our faces.
So you created your own online publishing, which is a good thing to do when you get doors slammed in your face, your own platform. And your background is in Silicon Valley, so that helped?
Yes, definitely. Silicon Valley marketing and public relations. Yeah. And, you know, here in Silicon Valley, I think we're all born and bred to believe that many of society's ills can be solved with technology. And I've always been kind of a entrepreneurial activist. When someone tells me I can't do something, it makes me want to fix the problem with technology. And so what I saw here was a huge problem. I imagined hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of talented writers around the world who would never be able to achieve their dream of publication simply because a publisher didn't see commercial potential in their book. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could create a free online publishing platform that would give every writer in the world the freedom to publish, and we would let readers become the new curators. We would let readers decide what's worth reading. And that's what we launched in 2008. Today, we are the world's largest publishing and distribution platform for self-published authors. We're serving over 100,000 authors around the world, publishing over 350,000 books. And many of our writers have gone on to become New York Times bestsellers.
And a lot of those books are erotica books, yeah?
Yeah, about 10% of our sales are erotica. Close to 50% of our sales are romance, contemporary romance. We're really big.
These aren't Harlequin type things.
Yes.
They are basically, yeah.
Yes, we love romance.
Don't necessarily love soap operas, however, I could presume.
Through writing the book about soap operas, I came to really appreciate soap operas as a really unique entertainment medium. Very few other forms of television have the ability to draw families in, multi-generational families, to watch shows. And they call them our shows and my shows. And it's their ability to really capture the hearts and minds of their audience is pretty incredible.
Well, in fact, there's a literary critic now deceased by the name of Leslie Fiedler, quite famous in the world of letters, who was ill and watched a lot of soap operas while he was ill. We're getting off the track here. But, you know, it was fascinating because he talked about how they had all of the power of great universal literature and so forth. And then Dan Wakefield came out with a book, too, a novelist that some people may recall on soap operas and their effect. It's a big challenge, though, with distribution and retailers for you, too, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, it's really helpful to look at how the publishing industry has evolved over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, which I'd like to think of the dark ages of publishing, it was a print-centric world. If you couldn't sell your book to a traditional publisher, you were a failed author because publishers controlled the printing press and they controlled the access to retail distribution. But about 6, 7, 8 years ago, all of that changed with the advent of ebooks and the rise of ebooks and the launch of the Amazon Kindle and Apple iBooks. With digital books, distribution to bookstores became democratized. It allowed every major retailer of books to carry every single book because the shelf space was unlimited. You know, prior to 10 years ago, many great print authors were pushed out of print before they had a chance to reach their readers because bookstores can only hold a small number of books in their stores, so they're constantly refreshing their inventory to make room for new books. And as authors lost their distribution, they were forced out of print. But now, thanks to this unlimited shelf space at retailers, every author has a chance to have their book listed side by side with every other author and be judged by the reading public.
It's still tough, though, Ted Weinstein, let me go to you on this, to make it obviously over the transom, but even with a really dedicated agent in those houses that are well established. A lot of that has to do, as I recall, with just the cartel takeover of publishing houses. There used to be a kind of noblesse oblige where they would publish an author that they liked. It would bring distinction to the publishing house. Now, it's really not only all about money and bottom line, but can we sell it to TV? Can we sell it to film? Can we do something with it? In other words, to distribute it for more money.
I think in broad outlines, that's right. But there is still the folks who go into publishing really do care about literature and intellectual property and content and ideas. And though all of the major publishers is certainly part of a publicly traded conglomerate, they all have portfolios of books that are a mix of books that they see have instant blockbuster potential, which sometimes doesn't happen, but you hope for the best, and others that may bring prestige or are just important books to publish. So though I often – my job essentially is to fight with the major publishers on behalf of my clients, the critique of them as only being motivated by money I will also push back against, because all of us in the industry could all be making a different kind of living in different realms, but we all are in publishing because we really do care about the substance.
Well, when you talk about your success stories, though, I think Amanda Hocking, Barry Eisler, rare but real success stories, has to do with what's brought in the bottom line, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of the success stories that you'll see in self-publishing, though, are real rarities. And that's the challenge when we look at traditional publishing versus self-publishing. In both cases, it's only the very few that succeed in grand numbers. And so to look at those anecdotal successes and to draw grand conclusions is often a very iffy prospect. So we've got a great self-publisher like Amanda Hocking or an Andy Weir or a John Locke or others who've then gone to work with traditional publishers.
We don't mean the original John Locke.
No, exactly. Sorry, the novelist. And then we have folks who have had great success in traditional publishing who also pursue some self-publishing opportunities. One example is actually a client of mine, Keith Devlin, who many of your listeners may know as Saturday Morning's math guy with Scott Simon on Weekend Edition. He's published 30 books through traditional presses. He's had a long career as one of the great math popularizers. His most recent book from Bloomsbury was coming out recently, and there was a chapter that didn't make sense in the book, just substantively. So he and the editor said, "Now let's pull it out." In the old days, we would have sold that to a magazine as a complimentary piece to help publicize the book. But I suggested to Keith, now that these online publishing opportunities existed, hey, why don't we publish it as an e-short? And he's ever adventurous, said, "Let's do that." And we, in fact, worked with Smashwords and with Amazon and published that single chapter as a short ebook, including the first chapter of the traditional book with the publisher's blessing. And it became an amazing tool to help publicize the traditional book. The traditional book publicized the e-single, and the two together were a complementary kind of project that helped Keith get even more attention for his work.
And again, Ted Weinstein is a literary agent and founder of the Ted Weinstein Literary Management, former music critic for NPR's All Things Considered. Laura Fraser is editorial director of She Books, which publishes short ebooks by women. How often, Laura, does one see a self-published work actually find its way, or a self-published writer find his or her way, in your case, her way, to what you call a legacy publisher?
Well, I think it can be a good runway. If you look at shebooks.net, what we've done with a couple of our books is provide the author with a platform to get noticed by a publisher or an agent. So we have one book called How It Goes in Mexico by Carol Murchison, which was picked up by She Writes Press and is doing really well. Frances Stroh did a memoir for us, which is now coming out from a big publisher. And so a lot of times it's a way to get noticed. Some of the women have gotten agents by publishing with us. And so it can be just a really great way to pick up your platform. And I think one of the things about self-publishing versus legacy publishing is figuring out as an author what your goal is and who your audience is. So if you're someone who has a real niche, if you write genre fiction, if you write about a particular, like a certain disease or something, and you have an audience out there that's very defined, then it makes a lot of sense to do self-publishing. Because if you can reach your audience, why not get all of the profits from the book rather than sending it to a legacy publisher where you're going to get, you know,
10% at best.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wrote a bestseller, An Italian Affair. Every time it sells a copy, I get a dollar, you know, so that doesn't make sense. But if
Yeah, John Farm for that novel. When did it come out?
Do I have to say?
Well, it's still in circulation.
It is. I'm still getting royalties.
Yeah, well, good for you. So am I. They don't amount to much, but I get them. Mark Coker, also again, is founder of Smashwords. He's here with us in studio as well. A man who actually climbed Kilimanjaro, I should add, right?
Yes, I do.
Want to get your props in there. That's something certainly to be impressed by. Can you talk about Jamie Maguire and Beautiful Disaster? There's a story
to
tell.
Sure. Yeah, well, Jamie Maguire... So a few years back, she wrote some books. She was unable to find a literary agent. And because publishers want you represented by a literary agent, she decided that she would self-publish. And within a couple months, she achieved enormous success as a self-published ebook author. And eventually she hit the New York Times bestseller list as a self-published author. She then sold... her book, Beautiful Disaster, and the follow-on sequel to that to a large publisher, and worked with a large publisher for a couple of years, and again hit the New York Times bestseller list a couple more times. She loved her publisher. She considered her publisher family. She was very happy with everything that they did for her. Yet, when it came time to decide what she was going to do going forward, she decided that she wanted to return to self-publishing. She decided that, you know, for her genre, romance, she has the ability to reach readers more effectively than a publisher can. And she didn't want to give up her digital rights forever. She thinks she can exploit them more effectively. So for the last year, she's back at Smashwords Publishing. And she's a really interesting example. She's an author who, you know, every publisher would love to work with her. She's got such a large international following. Yet she's discovered the joys of self-publishing, and we see this a lot.
The joys and the better remuneration as well.
Well, you know, it goes beyond the remuneration. Yes, as a self-published ebook author, you're going to earn 60 to 80% of the list price as your royalty. But, you know, as Ted mentioned earlier, most self-published authors don't sell well, just like most authors don't sell well. And when you talk with self-published authors and what they love about self-publishing, the first thing they mention is not that they're making a lot of money. It's the creative freedom, the total creative freedom, the joy of publishing. It's not about the money. It's not first and foremost. And this is something that I think maybe a lot of publishers don't understand, because publishing is a business. They need to sell books. They value books based on commercial merit, whereas writers value books and readers value books on a completely different metric.
Well, whether you're looking for fame or money, the reality of it is, this is a little dollop of wisdom from yours truly. They don't necessarily arrive, particularly with most books. I don't want to discourage, but I've seen too many writers come up and down the pike who had great expectations. Most recently, in fact, my sister's boyfriend published a novel that he wrote about 40 years ago in Paris, and when people were going to Paris to write novels, and self-published it, and it's what I call a journeyman's novel. I read it. You're always put in that awkward position of reading people's work and having to make judgments. I say two things. I will give you an honest opinion, and I'm just one opinion. But he had such grandiose expectations. You know, he thought Hollywood was going to be beating down his door and all these sorts of things. Modest expectations, whether you self-publish or whether you find a publisher. And by the way, I invite you to join the program, and you can do that now. Our toll-free number is available. That number, 866-733-6786. If you have questions about self-publishing, or if you've had experiences with self-publishing or ebook distribution or any of the things we're talking about, we'd like to hear from you. Again, you can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. Talking with Ted Weinstein and Mark Coker and Laura Fraser and you when we return on Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about navigating the changing world of self-publishing. Laura Fraser with us in studio is editorial director of SheBooks. And Mark Coker is founder of Smashwords, and Ted Weinstein is a literary agent and founder of Ted Weinstein Literary Management. And Mark was saying something actually off air that I wanted to jump on here before we go to your calls and emails. I also want to give Laura an opportunity to ask a question, a burning question of Mark. But Mark was saying sometimes these writers really need the illusions. It motivates them. And, you know, as someone who's been an English professor at Lowell all these decades, I have students who will bring me work and they will think that, you know, the world needs this work, whether it's poetry, fiction, or drama. And in most cases, of course, the world doesn't necessarily need it or want it, but those illusions are good for publishing?
Not just illusions, but delusions are important to publishing. We writers have stories in our heads. We have visions in our heads. And we have this desire to express them and share them with the world. It's pretty crazy that most writers think that their stories deserve to be read by millions of people. But if it weren't for that passion, if it weren't for that belief in one's ability to contribute to the world through their writing, then we would have no books.
But sometimes it can work the opposite way, too. I always think of the example of Kafka, who wanted his books burned by Max Brod, his biographer. He didn't want anybody, presumably, to read them. And thank heavens, Max Brod said, no, they need to be read. And as the executor of his estate, got them out there.
Right. You know, writers face tremendous hardship. It's very difficult to sell books. It's very difficult to reach readers. There are so many more reasons to quit every day as a writer than there are to power on. And so that's why it's really important to have that belief in your potential, to be somewhat delusional, and to recognize that, you know, there's a joy in the journey that shouldn't be judged by those traditional metrics.
And Laura, you had a question for Mark.
Sure. My question was basically, if I'm on your site, how do I find a good read? I mean, if I go to the bookstore, I have recommendations from the staff. I have the books that are out on the end. If I have the New York Times bestseller list. If someone goes to shebooks.net, there aren't that many books. They're all sort of beautiful and curated.
She's smart. That's the second time she mentioned her website. By the way, all our guest companies are on our website, plus tips on self-publishing from Ted Weinstein, kqed.org/forum.
I didn't mean to be self-promotional. But if I go to a site like yours that has 350,000 books, either as a reader or a writer, how do I find a good read that I'm going to like?
Well, it's a wonderful question. You know, 10 years ago, when publishers curated books and publishers decided what readers had the right to read, the decision was made for the readers. But now that publishing is completely democratized and any writer has the freedom to publish a book, it creates new challenges, but it also creates new opportunities. And I think the online retailers do a tremendous job of making the books worth reading visible to readers. And what they do is they leverage the wisdom of the crowd. Readers are the new curators. So if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Apple iBooks, readers can easily browse through the bestsellers. They can browse through the latest releases of books. They can browse by category. Unlike a traditional physical bookstore, which might only have 20, 30 shelves in the store, online retailers have literally hundreds of different shelves, micro-targeted categories. So if you're interested in historical romance set in New Zealand, it's really easy to find the very best books in that category of your micro-interest.
All right, Ted had something to add here. I want to get to your calls and emails.
I was going to say, what you're both saying is absolutely a wonderful reminder that so much of publicizing a book happens outside the realms of the book business, that authors need to build that platform. They need to become known, whether it's on social media, whether it's through their professional or spiritual or other communities. That to Laura's point, very often people will go to a bookstore and want some advice. Hey, I'm looking for something in this category. But more often people go to either an online or a physical bookstore knowing the book they want to get. And seeding that interest is the author's first and most important challenge.
Well, we're getting challenges. Let me just go to a couple of emails here which talk about the kind of challenges self-publishing or those who self-publish face. Carl writes, I've had a very negative experience with self-publishing my novel in paperback. Book critics won't review it, agents won't consider working with me, and bookstores won't stock it on consignment. It's cost me way too much money so far, and I don't think spending more dollars hiring a publicist or buying book reviews will change anything. There's a real stigma attached to self-publishing despite the hype, and I regret going that route. And Lisa writes, I'm in the same boat right now with the nonfiction items I'm working on. The stigma is real. Self-promotion feels harder than the actual writing process. There are also many self-proclaimed gurus and e-courses designed to take your money to supposedly help you. And my question is, how do you self-promote without feeling sleazy? mean, these kind of questions are real, and you guys get them all the time. We're going to go to our callers in a moment, but some dollops of wisdom from you here?
Well, I think that whole notion of feeling uncomfortable is something the author has to really wrestle with, that if you're uncomfortable publicizing your own work, then to expect anyone else to publicize it is really not the right mindset. And not to sound too Northern Californian spiritual about it, but the person who wrote in needs to sort of do some self-examination. If you're not comfortable touting yourself, maybe this isn't the right project for you.
And Michael, I would add that I know that marketing is a big fear for many writers. My counsel to writers is that marketing is not as important as you think it is. Marketing is a catalyst. Promotion is a catalyst for your book. The most important marketing for your book is the book itself. How does a single reader react to your book? Does a single reader become two readers? Does your book spark word of mouth? Does your book touch the reader's soul? Does it take them to heights of ecstatic satisfaction or not? There is a glut of high-quality books out on the marketplace today, and if your book isn't super awesome, if your book doesn't make the reader go wow, if it's not that emotionally satisfying, then your book isn't good enough.
All right, lots of callers. Let's go to them, and we begin, Rachel, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Full disclosure, I am one of Laura Fraser's authors, Rachel. I wrote a book called DIY Mom, which is about a whole different kind of do-it-yourself. But my question is, you recently had Pamela Paul on the show, the editor of the New York Times Book Review, and Pamela said bluntly that they do not even consider ebooks. And I'm just wondering whether in this whole new world of publishing, whether that's really doing a disservice. And, you know, with so few book reviews left in major newspapers, you know, ignoring ebooks, is that really, you know, missing out on potentially great stories?
Well, I wish we had Pamela Paul here to answer that. We may have her on again, and I don't want to hesitate in asking, but any thoughts from any of our panelists here?
Sure.
Ted, want to say?
Oh, yeah. What I would say is that years ago, the book review also wouldn't review paperback originals, and now they do. So I think over time, there'll be some more coverage for ebooks and other new formats. But more important is, and sadly, this is true, that even great reviews in the New York Times don't drive book sales the way they used to.
Yeah. And thank you for the call, Rachel. Let me go to another caller. This is Eileen joining us. Good morning, Eileen.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, thanks.
So I run a company called Blurb here in San Francisco, and I want to make the case for print because we've been talking about ebooks for self-publishers, and we and others are in the business of enabling authors whose work is graphically rich, illustrated, like cookbooks, children's books, graphic novels, photography, you get the idea, to be able to leverage new technology now, print-on-demand technology, to print copies of one and make them available via Amazon, Ingram, Big Book Distributor, et cetera, sell them and make a bunch of money too.
Okay. Thank you, Eileen. Appreciate hearing from you. And we'll now go to San Jose and welcome Vivian. Vivian, you're on forum.
Hi. It's Biddy, not Vivian. But hi, I'm a self-published author, and I just wanted to address what Laura Fraser had been saying about working with bookstores. And this is also, this is hard copy. This is paperback. And I find that I distribute through Ingram Sparks, and they can actually pre-order the books in for their customers. And so it emulates the traditional publishing route to some degree. There's not the same discoverability because the book isn't actually on the shelf, but it goes some ways towards sort of being in the bookstores and being available throughout.
Okay. Again, I thank you for the call. Any comment from any of our panel?
Well, they, Laura, you know, Fraser? The bookstores can order it if they know that it exists, but it's hard to know that it exists if it isn't in the bookstore.
Here's Max, who writes, most authors interested in self-publishing desperately need a professional editor, not just a proofreader who might also be an uncritical friend. So much potential out there remains untapped by authors who self-publish sloppily mounted manuscripts. Biddy writes, I self-published my first novel March to November last September, and I'm so happy that I did. It's been hard work, but a very rewarding and positive experience. Publicity is the biggest challenge, but I called in every contact I had. I live in the United States, but the book is set in Ireland, where I'm from originally, so I targeted my marketing with an Irish flavor. I took a trip back to Ireland and was received by the Lord Mayors in two cities, was interviewed on radio and TV, and I even managed to get a piece published in the Irish Times on my experiences. Terry writes, I guess I'm a rare example of a highly successful self-publisher. The keys to success, don't call yourself a self-publisher. Boutique works better. Have a book that fills a niche, gets an award, that's essential, and target your marketing. Example, professional associations, if appropriate, and build word of mouth. Finally, avoid Amazon at all costs. Their cut is too huge. And we'll go to another caller, and that's you. Hank, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I self-published using Smashwords. And I really appreciated it. It was quite easy to use. It took some work. I also found an editor on the internet. If I can plug her, she's in L.A., Megan Pinson. She was extremely helpful and not terribly expensive. And then my books showed up on iTunes and Amazon. It's available in, I don't know, 7 or 8 different formats. And I've actually received a couple royalty checks. But I wanted to ask the Smashwords owner what his business model is, because everything that I did through them was great. They did a lot of work for me.
Yeah, well, Hank, thank you for publishing and distributing with Smashwords. Our business model is very simple. We don't earn money unless our authors earn money. So we take a commission on every book that we sell. If you're only distributing free books through Smashwords, we're not making any money on your books. But hopefully you'll someday start publishing some books with us that do have a price.
Laura Fraser.
That there are other costs to doing a book. There's the design of the cover. There's copy editing. There's editing. All of those kinds of services go into what makes a really good book. And there are some places out there like Blurb and like She Writes Press who will help you with those services. But when you're talking about your percentage, what you're just doing is taking what someone has given you and putting it up. Do you help with the design or anything like that?
Right. So Smashwords is an ebook publishing platform. So the author is the publisher. The author comes to us with a finished, edited manuscript. They upload the manuscript to us along with an ebook cover image. They provide us the metadata, so the title of the book description, the categorization, the price, goes into our system. Our technology automatically converts that into multiple ebook formats, and then we distribute it out to retailers such as iBooks, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Scribd, and Oyster. So it is really important for writers to understand that if you pursue self-publishing, you're the publisher. The onus is on you to think and act like a professional publisher, to learn the business, and to publish with professionalism. So at Smashwords, what we do is we provide the tools for professional publishing, but the author's responsible for bringing us a great book, hiring an editor, hiring a cover designer.
And the author gets the mantle publisher.
Yeah, the author is the publisher.
It's a mantle and it's a yoke, that there's a lot of roles that go into it.
And at SheBooks, just for example, to get to the point where we'd give it to Smashwords would cost us about $2,500.
Sure. Yeah. Well, publishers, I'm not one of those people that think that, you know, it's traditional publishing versus self-publishing. I think these are all great options. And writers should see this as a full spectrum.
And again, Mark Coker is the founder of Smashwords. They're an e-book publishing and distribution platform located in Los Gatos. And here's Don, who writes, great show on self-publishing with honest and accurate depictions of the difficult process. You might also highlight Sam Barry and Book Passage in Corte Madera. They have a hands-on practical program that helps guide independent writers. Book Passage led me to Ingram Spark, a publishing company that has a solid relationship with bookstores. I moved my book from a publisher unacceptable to bookstores. I'm now booked into 2 July events at great local bookstores, Book Passage in Corte Madera, and Books, Inc. in Palo Alto. Thanks to great authors like Alan First, who encouraged self-publishing on your show last year. I'm moving along the path with the Millionaire's Cruise sailing toward Black Tuesday. It's slow, requires strategy, but if you don't mind small victories, it is promising. Another listener named Leslie says, how are your guests with placing books in libraries?
Well, I can answer that question. Smashwords has signed distribution deals with a couple of the largest library aggregators. So we're distributing our books to a company called Overdrive. Overdrive supplies ebooks to over 20,000 public libraries around the world. So if you self-publish your ebook with Smashwords, for example, all of these libraries have the ability to purchase your ebook.
Let me go to some quick questions here by email that some of you can answer. Stephen says, what can anybody on the panel tell us about self-published children's books?
That's an interesting challenge. Children's books, by and large, are much more illustrated books. And that means, as Eileen mentioned, the head of Blurb when she called in a few minutes ago, we've talked a lot about digital publishing, which is new opportunities and challenges. And these my two co-panelists are leaders in this. But physical books are now more cost-effective and more available to authors. It's still very pricey. And for kids' books, you have obviously much bigger design challenge, much higher printing costs. So it's still it's a hard project to take on as an individual.
But boy, they do often sell off the hooks. I mean, I do the Kidney Foundation Literary Luncheon every year, and they always have a children's author, and all these grandmothers and grandfathers line up and are just eager to have those books. Roy writes, no one is talking about the role of the editor in book publishing today. As a veteran editor of 42 years in publishing, I teach a course on self-publishing, and the most important dimension of that course is not about how to publish, but how to understand how publishing works. Stanley says, what's your guest's opinion of Kindle? So it's kind of a broad question.
Would you like me to take that on?
Well, you sound like you want to.
Well, look, Amazon is a pioneer in ebook publishing and ebook distribution, and they deserve a lot of credit for ushering in the ebook revolution.
But
they have a competitive strategy that's completely different than every other retailer. They're looking to disintermediate everyone who stands between the writer of the book and the reader of the book. So they view publishers as competitors. They view other retailers, distributors as competitors. They've got a strategy that's very focused on exclusivity. They want to make all of their books exclusive to Amazon. And if the books aren't exclusive to Amazon, then they punish those books by making them less visible, less discoverable to readers. So they are a big competitor in the publishing industry.
But they may be delivering your book by drone, so there is that yes. possible advantage there. Let me bring another caller in here, and let's go next to Suzanne. Suzanne, hi.
Hi. We published Wickedly Awesome Travels, Paris, a kid's travel activity book just last week on Create Space. It's the first of a series, and my question is regarding marketing. We have a website, we have a Facebook page, there's some targeted emails going out. What specific next steps do your guests recommend? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question, Ted Weinstein.
It sounds like you're doing everything right, that there isn't one right answer. You know your market, you know your book really well, you just spoke about it incredibly crisply and professionally. So what I would just say is more, 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 and over time you'll start to see which of your marketing efforts are having the best effect and keep leaning that direction.
And good luck to you, Suzanne, and thank you for the call. And on to another caller, that's Anjali. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I also am a first-time children's book author. I have an illustrator, and now how do I break into this market? Any suggestions for that?
If you're going to go the traditional route, the fact that you are a team and have, I assume, some really good demonstrations of what the ultimate book would look like, that's the material you would pitch to all the many good children's book agents that are out there. That the best order to go in for any author, if you're open to all the possibilities, is first pitch agencies. If that isn't working after a period of time, then you can pitch some of the smaller publishers directly. And then if that hasn't worked, you might want to go the self-publishing route. If you do it out of that order, you can sometimes muddy the waters. But doing it in that systematic way is maximizing your chances. And you can always decide not to go the more traditional routes if what is offered to you isn't appealing. But at least that way you're going down a logical path to think through what your options are.
And Ted, talk about, if you would, just how you go about as an agent determining what may be a diamond in the rough or what is likely to be something that publishers are interested in finding.
It's a funny mix. About a third of my clients come through referrals because good people know good people. About a third are blind submissions through my website or folks I meet at writers' conferences or elsewhere. And about a third are people that I have approached. They've either written something interesting or they've done something on the web that went viral or they're an interesting writer. Something about them makes me think, there's an interesting book possibility.
So you're
there.
Always looking and from multiple sources, right?
Absolutely. Our job is to scout that if we're not bringing new projects to light and helping shape them before the book proposal goes to the publishers, then we haven't added any value.
What kind of sources do you go to?
I spend an inordinate amount of time surfing the web every day. My friends tease me I do it for fun, but I tell them that, look, it keeps leading to wonderful book projects.
There's a listener who says, something that's missing from this discussion on self-publishing is the difference between promoting fiction and nonfiction. Some thoughts from anyone? Mark, you're shaking
sure.
your head. Yes, Mark Corker?
Well, yeah, definitely different opportunities. You know, at Smashwords, over 80% of our sales are fiction. Fiction writers have some really interesting promotional opportunities when they're self-publishing an ebook. Many fiction writers write series. Many of our authors have found tremendous success, and we've quantified this success by making the first book in their series free. And that drives readers into the series. A free book, on average, gets over 40 times more downloads than a book at any price. And it's a chance for writers to expose their writing and their writer brand to readers. And then those readers go on to purchase their books. We've also found writers, both of fiction and nonfiction, have achieved great success using ebook pre-orders. Pre-orders gets your book listed for sale at the retailers months in advance of the book being available. And at retailers such as iBooks, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo, all of those orders that you accumulate leading up to your on-sale date credit toward your first day's sales rank. So it causes your book to spike in the bestseller lists, which makes your book more visible to more readers and more desirable to more readers. So those are a couple tricks that have been very effective.
Yeah, I think you've answered a question from Suzanne. It says, can you please share thoughts on the merits of serial publishing? Is it viable to distribute chapters at a time to build platform?
I wouldn't recommend doing chapters at a time, but I would definitely recommend writing series. Readers expect a full-length reading experience. If they feel like you've only given them a teaser, even if that teaser is free, they feel disappointed.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking to Mark Coker, Laura Fraser, and Ted Weinstein, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another of your calls. Let's go next to Richmond and welcome Bruce. Good morning.
Oh, thanks, Michael. This is Bruce from the Father's Forum. I published my first book, Finding Time for Fatherhood, using Dan Pointer's book on how to self-publish before there was digital publishing. And I was kind of moved by your story, Michael, of your brother-in-law. I said,
not a brother-in-law, just a boyfriend.
Oh, boyfriend. Okay.
That's okay.
And I set reasonable expectations. I thought if I could sell 2,500 books, I'd be really happy. And I was able to do that. And the book kind of became a bit of a cult favorite. And a couple of things I did that I found very helpful was I just called bookstores and sent them a copy of my book and asked them if they'd like to have me come and read, particularly for local bookstores. And literally 100% of them said, great, come by. So there was a lot of interest in that way for me to feel comfortable promoting my book, which is nonfiction, and it also helped my program that I do for dads. And then the other thing I've found over the years as the book has been available is I get wonderful emails now from people, and it's available on our website and things now, of how much they appreciate the book. So, you know, aside from having made a little bit of money, the experience of doing it and getting the response I did was great. And then my last book, which was Becoming a Dad, How Fatherhood Changes Men, I did that through CreateSpace on Amazon. And, you know, with a moderate amount of marketing and having it available on the website and, you know, using LinkedIn and sending emails out, newsletters out, that's also done, you know, fairly well for my expectations. But I think the most important thing that I found, and I think this has been echoed by a number of the people both through the emails and on your program, was having good editors really helped me after I wrote the book, getting it in really, so it was something that was literate, people could really appreciate it. That was a big help.
Well, Bruce, thank you for relating your experiences and also for the advice on a good editor, which is always good advice, and appreciate your call. We were talking before about how reviews don't necessarily help boost sales, even, you know, front page reviews, not like they used to, perhaps. What about bookstores, though? I mean, I know some authors who've appeared at bookstores and they've been publicized and nobody showed up, except maybe the owner of the bookstore, the person running the event. Also, there's a lot of talk these days about book groups, particularly fiction reading, especially women's groups, Laura, and so forth, and how they can help boost sales through buzz and word of mouth. But talk about bookstores and book groups.
Clubs are a wonderful way to promote books. As an author, I would often go to book clubs. People would would read the book, discuss it, and then they'd tell their friends. And there are also ways that you can publicize your book to book groups by offering free books to book groups. There are some publicists out there who really target book groups. In terms of bookstores, I had the experience once where I was reading in LA on the final day of the Lakers playoffs. And it literally was me and my publicist. But
must be so disheartening.
Yeah, but really the publicity that goes into those readings with the ads and so forth gets your book out even if people don't show up. So, you know, it's any publicity is good publicity, I think.
Any authors you know of who have tried self-immolation or something to bring attention to their book? Here's Carla who tweets, self-publishers can offer their books for free via the library system, Self-E program, selfielibraryjournal.com. And again, all our guests can be their websites can be found on our website, kqed.org. Here's Robert. Robert, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I self-published two books over the last 9 years, and I did them for gardening, nonfiction, and paper. And I could not have succeeded if I hadn't found a distributor. So I'd like to have your guest talk about how to get a distributor.
Okay. Important question. Anybody want to step up here, Ted?
For physical books, there are a number of distribution opportunities out there. For digital books, obviously, Mark is one of the biggies, as is Amazon and some others. There are plenty of options. I actually put up a list of resources on my own website, twliterary.com/KQED, with links to a lot of different resources that listeners might find helpful. Everybody's situation is a little bit different. You seem to know quite clearly your markets, and that would help probably choose among the many distribution opportunities.
Well, we thank you for a most informative hour. Extend thanks to Laura Fraser, who again is an author in her own right, but also editorial director of She Books, which publishes short ebooks by women, and Mark Coker, who is the founder of Smashwords, an ebook publishing and distribution platform which is based in Los Gatos, and Ted Weinstein, literary agent, founder of the Ted Weinstein Literary Management, and former music critic for NPR's All Things Considered. Let me not only thank those guests that I just mentioned, but also thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. You can also continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum, and you can find out more information about the three guests and how to get in touch with them. And what's happening tomorrow? Well, tomorrow we're going to be... What are we going to be doing? I have to think for a moment. Oh, we got Bruce Boce coming in at 9:30. That's kind of should be exciting. Stay tuned for more here on KQED Public Radio. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.